they'll be implanted and their experience. You'll see how well you can take over the portion of the by making him or her a murderer, insane, or maybe suicide. And for Stephen Greer, I congratulate you for your excellent presentation and also for your new book. And for the first time I saw you took up also mind control things in that book. And if I understood it correctly, of course they are used a lot to cover up. And the UFO question is used to cover up the mystery and secret services mind control experimentation, which has been going on for about 50 years. So, starting with Richard.
All right, I'll try and do a little justice to your two questions. First one had to do with cloning, specifically human cloning. Cloning technology in the black world, the world of secret projects, as Dr. Wolf has stated openly in his book. I'm not telling you this on my own. I'm merely quoting available public sources. I'm saying that for my own and my family's protection, because I've been threatened to stay out of covert technology issues. So I've been merely quoting available public sources, one of which is Dr. Wolf's fine book, The Catchers of Heaven, which I would recommend everyone to acquire. And see me afterwards, we can tell you how to do that. Cloning has been going on in the secret world of classified governmental research in the United States for decades. And the advances we hear about now, Dolly the Sheep in Scotland, and all that, and more simple animal and plant cloning has been going on for quite some time. Now, the military in the last decade or two has been doing human cloning and bringing it to a level of sophistication. After Dr. Wolf produced a prototype human clone that I described during my remarks, gestated from cellular tissue level to hold a grown adult in 1 year and brought to life, that particular experiment was terminated by his superiors because the individual had conscience and that they didn't want a soldier with conscience. Dr. Wolf left the cloning effort at that point, but the technology was already available to the military, and he tells me they went on without him to do further development of cloning and have succeeded in producing human beings that do not have that kind of conscience or program to have within them a conscience in their behavior. And there is therefore the concern that these unprincipled human beings can create purposes. The other question had to do with the information from Dr. Wolf, National Security Council, that he saw signs in the national security community, the intelligence community in the U.S. and elsewhere, that a public acknowledgement of UFO reality would take place. Well, he said it several months ago, so I'll back it out. Let's say before the year 2001 is over, that there would be public information that this is real. It would no longer be whispered matters during the UFO conference, but would be in public domain discourse in the world in general.
I'd just like to make a real quick comment about clones, if anybody can make a good one. My wife wants you to contact her right away to replace me. I'm just kidding. She says she has a clown, but not a clone. So she's looking for help. I don't know anything about cloning or anything like that, so maybe that's for these two gentlemen who I know a lot more about it than I. In addressing your question, this dear lady about implantation, alleged implantation of people by someone in the intelligence community or intelligence communities. There is good information that implantation, in fact, has occurred and has occurred for some time. Apparently, this was experimental in the beginning, and then, as often in covert operations, things get out of hand. Experiments get a little more bizarre, and then sometimes they quit telling the people they're experimenting on what's going on, and sometimes people just don't get told, and it just goes on anyway. This is an unfortunate aspect about volunteering for programs. Sometimes they don't even tell you, it just happens anyway. I want to kind of hedge my bet here just a little bit by saying, and qualifying this, by saying the case that I want to talk to you about, I don't want to talk to you about 2 million cases or 100 cases or 500 cases of somebody else's work, because I can't prove that. There is much good information from Walter Bohr and plenty of great people out there who literally do this for a living, and they are very good authorities in this sort of thing and have all kinds of wonderful data. What I can attest to is this. I've handled a number of cases of people who claim intelligence contact, even through implantation and so on. In the first 3 cases that I've worked, I did not find this to be the case at all. It just wasn't. I was very disappointed because, first of all, you're making an accusation against the United States government. And I personally take offense to that if it's not true. Now, if it is true, I take another offense. Because at this point, somebody in our government has done something, as far as I'm concerned, if that's happened, has done something that is inhumane and it is just unconscionable. For anyone to do anything invasive to you without your permission, to violate your free will, to me, is wrong. Period. I don't care who does it. Dr. Helmut Lammer contacted me this last year and said, would you head up the medical scientific work concerning the alleged implantation of people in this phenomenon concerning this intelligence implants? And I said, I would be more than happy to look at these cases and go where I can with it. Since then, I have contacted 4 people that, and then even before that, one case before that, wasn't sure what it was we found. But since then, I've retrieved 4 objects out of people. There is no question it is human technology. It is something that looks like a bioshift. It was implanted in people. It is no question it is human orientation. What the thing does yet, we don't know. If it does anything, I don't know. But I think that to me is not the smoking gun. The smoking gun is not that you have found something in someone, but what does it do? There again, I suspect that, as I've mentioned before, in other situations, I think that to be able to alter a person's neurotransmitters, so serotonin, dopamine, and things like this, and you literally will own these people. You will control their emotions. You will do a lot of things to these people. There is technology out there where you don't have to be implanted. And there can still be a good degree of control over people anyway. This is coming technology. It's just the way it works. You don't have to have a quote-unquote chip inside you to get you to do something. That's an easier way of doing it. But there is telemetry and other techniques that have been experimenting on. My opinion is, if we know about that right now, it's probably passé. That's my opinion. And so in the 4 cases I have right now, and I'll close with this, because there are others here to speak. The thing that excited my scientist the other day, he said, this is incredible. He said, this guy has coughed up 3 of these chips out of his throat. He said, this is unbelievable. I said, what's so exciting? He said, because it looks just like the one that the surgeon removed from the person in Brazil 4 years before. Now you have something 4 years apart, 2 countries apart, and people are totally unrelated. He said, that is quite exciting. He said, they're identical. And then he did test for me that day, and he said, they're not only identical in the looks, they're identical in the makeup. He said, it didn't come from the same stock. He said, but it is the same manufacturer.
Well, I have so much to share on this subject that it would be another hour and a half talk. And it isn't pretty. But to make it short and sweet, or maybe not so sweet, it is the truth. And I'll pull back the curtain behind which is the Wizard of Oz, pulling all the levers and handles to convince people of something that isn't there. And that is that you have a multiplicity of phenomena, plural, that the UFO community has mistakenly labeled as an abduction phenomenon, singular. What in reality is happening is that in counterintelligence and intelligence philosophy, if there's a phenomenon occurring that you don't want people to see, you create a phenomenon, a decoy phenomenon, which is even more prominent, and which all the researchers and the public and the media begin to follow. This is what the human abduction phenomenon currently is predominantly about, and about which very few people have reliable data or intelligence sources on. To wit, the ability to electronically have people experience whatever you want to have them experience has been around for decades. My military advisor, who is a man who sets up meetings between me and the Joint Staff and people of this nature, has personally been read into such a project. A device that was manufactured and studied first at the White Oaks Naval Facility in Maryland, which is now closed, and later manufactured by a number of electronic companies that are very highly involved in these sort of areas. And this is the device which he told me as follows. We can target an individual or a group of individuals, and they will have whatever experience we wish for them to have. If we want them to have a conversation with their personal God, they will have one, and they will believe it is real. That is how good these technologies are. The implant technologies have been around, in point of fact, since the 30s, and very sophisticated versions of them since the mid to late 50s, according to people I've spoken to who have been in corporations that have built these things. Remember, by the time you hear about it in the non-covert world, it's usually several generations old and passé in the subterranean covert world of unacknowledged projects. I personally take no offense to that idea being brought up in terms of being an American, because the government that I know and the government that I elect is not involved with these things, but it is a rogue secret government element within that government acting outside of constitutional and democratic authority which are doing these things. So you can say whatever you will, I take no offense as an American. What I do say is I'm offended that the community of the media, the UFO subculture, and others have been deceived according to these plans. And the plans are to put into the public domain post-event using the following. Alien reproduction vehicles that look like UFOs that are manufactured by a consortium of companies which include but are not limited to Lockheed Martin, Northrop Aerospace, E-Systems, EG&G, Science Applications International Corporation, and a few others. These devices have on them electronic systems like the ones I told you about developed at White Oak's Naval Facility. They are then using, on board this craft, biomachine creatures. They look like a little gray from Zeta Reticuli. They are not. They are manufactured in a facility that I have people who have been in directly have been in. That is in Mexico. These facilities are linked centrally to Los Alamos and underground connectors, which are number one thing that's important in all of these are then used to simulate extraterrestrial experiences that are totally close to the ball, so that a certain spin on the budget, a will be put out there for the peer review, because the ultimate endpoint of that is the propaganda to get enough people frightened of all things alien so that a justification for the militarization of space and the spending of trillions of dollars on space-based weapon systems can be unfurled during this century, the century of the year 2000. Now that's a plan that has been underway for about 40 years. It is nothing new. And what I am concerned about is the extent to which the public has not been told about these things. Now, let no one misconstrue, because when I hear this, I know that I'm saying that there are no people who have had ET contact or been taken on board a spacecraft. There are. There are real extraterrestrial encounters. What I'm saying is that there is a dominant false phenomenon that has been foisted on the world, and in particular has been targeted into the UFO subculture, since it is the entry point and the interface between the public and the covert programs, which are completely deceptive cases. And I believe that we have been not thorough enough in doing our homework with folks who can help us understand which experience is memorized, which is false, which is real, and which is something that's part of an agenda from the intelligence community to, quite frankly, perpetrate a host on the public over a period, a long period of time, the end result being the attempt to scare people and create fear so that the militarization of space eventually can be supported by the whole planet. Remember what Ronald Reagan said. He said, wouldn't our job of creating world unity be easier if we had a common alien threat to fight? Now, he said this on five or six occasions to the UN, to the Council on Foreign Relations. I assure you that this is part of the plan, and I think a very central part of the plan are the host UFO events that are made to look extraterrestrial, but in point of fact are totally military human programs run out of primarily the intelligence and industrial sector where these high-tech little things are created and where the host is being perpetrated from.
I have a question for Richard Boylan because I didn't get a chance to ask him, so I'm going to ask him in public. I saw that your firm is investing a lot in education of children in science, and I heard that when you did step down or change your focus from looking at the conspiracy kind of theory in ufology, and you started looking into education. I heard something, I don't know any of the details, of looking at education of children in a Star Children's School of some kind, or teaching children how to accept this reality. Could you enlighten us on that?
Yes, thank you, Paul. That's an area I didn't get to in my remarks earlier today. Time constraints being what they were, but let me spend a moment to share with you perhaps some of the most interesting, exciting, and dynamic parts of this movement towards the new cosmic society that we are moving into. And that, of course, has to do with our children and our children's children. Extraterrestrials have been interacting with humans for many decades, and many of them have got slightly gifts, sensitivities, metabolism tends to slow down in a useful way. The person won't last long, doesn't age as long, etc. But also, very often, what I would call minor tweaking of the reproductive material in that individual. So that later on, in the course of their human life, they have children. Children tend to be a little different than the average child. They tend to be brighter, more cognitive-minded, more psychic, more advanced in various ways. These, what I will call star children, are our future. Those who have been so touched creating this latest evolution in our human evolvement. Our question be, it would seem naturally, some of the leadership in becoming society, because they will have the intelligence, the psychic sensitivity, the cosmic awareness, to be in the forefront as the extraterrestrial presence and contact is out in the open. Now, it is very important, obviously, that these children reach their full potential, and in many constrictive countries, in America is one of the most constrictive with the cover-up still in place. It is tough for a child to be all that they can be in a culture that says UFOs don't exist, ET visitation of humans is doubtful or poppycock nonsense. How can such a child come out of the closet, so to speak, an American phrase we have, and acknowledge themselves as a child of a parent who's been visited, that spells visited and altered, and having abilities that are not considered normal? If they were to come out publicly in such a way at school, children would point at them, perhaps laugh, perhaps feel they have cooties, something you have to stay away from. And so these children are inhibited. And it has come to me and some other folks that work in this area that it is time to institutionalize how we're going to help the children grow into this coming cosmic generation. And the way, one of the ways we do that institutionally is proper schooling. And so we are going to set up a Star Kids school, the beginning of a number of Star Kids school. We hope to have it underway before this year is out. We are having a conference in March in Arizona, a weekend workshop with some of these Star Kids and their parents to begin to put together the ideas and to begin to put together some of the faculty, so to speak, for working with these children. And this will not be a top-down teaching school where the master comes in and tells the pupil all the facts. These children already have embedded within them great pools of consciousness and ability. And the task will be much more to facilitate this, to sort of create an environment for these children to interact with each other and feel free to do things like teleportation or healing or reading the future, telepathy, of course, and to grow these abilities so that these children will, as they come into adulthood, be fully confident and capable of being their true, fully expanded selves and services models to the rest of us, of what the new cosmic citizen looks and operates like. So it is indeed a very exciting time and project.
Two questions to Dr. Borland. About what you recently talked about, the kids, how do you choose them? How do you know they're star children?
I don't choose them. They know who they are, and word of mouth, as they become aware of this school, they or their parents or both begin to come forward and present themselves. We already have a handful with no publicity at all. Actually, the information is being done to a degree by the ETs, the extraterrestrials, who somehow make these kids aware that they should contact me or one of the other focal persons and present themselves. And so we have a core, and as we set up the school and actually get it operational, obviously at that point, the publicity will come. We've already had One Wire Service pick up this story and run with it. I've had a few interviews, but it's not time yet to do a big ta-da announcement because the school is not yet operational. But as it becomes operational, you have more kids and more parents who are sitting there now scratching their heads, perplexed. What do I do with this child? He does things that are impossible according to contemporary science. You know, you read my mind. I begin to think of the question I'm going to ask him, and he answers me out loud before I've asked him the question. You know, he'd probably be in school for perplexed parents, right alongside the school for the kid. During the workshop, we'll have a workshop for perplexed parents alongside, but word will spread both by normal human communication and apparently by the ETs telling kids that this is a form of focus. And not to overfocus it on myself and my group either. I've been associate up in Northern California that trains on a Star Kid High School for the upper division, if you will. And others are beginning to surface. I've met one or two fields that they would like to study this process and perhaps start one of their own. They know who they are. They've been touched by the ETs.
Thank you. I would like to go back to what you talked about before and your contact, Dr. Wolf. He worked with ETs day and night, and he was showing the technology. But this technology is also used against the ETs to shoot them down and so on. How did that work out?
Well, I don't know if you work nights. I think in underground labs, they don't pay attention to whether it's day or night at the surface. I think the chum underground, the human being, turns into a different time clock. After a while, it rotates around. But anyway, certainly, yes, shoulder to shoulder with ET consultant scientists day after day. And much has been shared and discovered. And has some of this technology been turned around and used in a hospital against ETs? Yes, not by Dr. Wolf's initiative. In fact, he sits a very aging, sad, anguished man today because he has seen so much of the work that he and his ET colleagues collaboratively brought forward in the way of technological and medical and scientific advances being distorted and twisted to militaristic weapons purposes. And so some of the technology we know as particle beam, plasmoid, and other high-energy physics is being used in weapon systems that are used successfully to shoot down some UFOs that come into 3D space and are therefore vulnerable. Electromagnetic pulse weapons, all of these. This is the conundrum of human society. If we were to step out for a moment as ETs looking down on Earth, we would say, gee, there are so many good people here, many of whom in this room. People of high consciousness who want to see the future, who want to grow the future. And on the other hand, there are so many of these distressful people. Their hearts are full of anger and fear. Their hands are full of guns and super weapons. What do we make of such a society? Do we extinguish it to get rid of the risk? Do we tolerate the evil in order to let the good people grow? You can see the struggle, and it is a struggle mirrored in us as we struggle with those same tendencies in our own societies. We have to take back our society from the distorted power centers and militarists who would save us from ourselves, so they say, and end up creating a militaristic state in the process of doing that. We need to get back to a cooperative, trust-built, free, open, communicative society as a planet, and take it from there so that there's no more hostile reception for those who would visit us and share what they know with us.
I have a question for Stephen Greer. You were talking about needing money, you needed funding. And what you saw here a little while ago on the TV screen, Joe Furbridge, you seem to have an awful lot of money. What's stopping you from collecting up the town?
You'll have to ask Mr. Furbridge. I have not. We've had very long meetings several times. He has his own plans and projects, and I think have it for that question, Mr. Firmage.
Well, this question to Dr. Rick. You've been revealing a lot of information during this meeting today, and seems to me like it will be compromising, or it seems to be a very dangerous job you're doing. Have you ever been trying to be stopped by someone, whoever it is, and what kind of methods do they use in terms of trying to stop your information? And how do you protect yourself?
Well, I put myself totally in God's hands. All the time. That's one thing. On a more practical level, although that's very practical, actually, if you understand the spirit and how it works. There are a number of people you have to understand, if you read between the lines of what I shared today, who are very supportive of what we're trying to do, very powerful people. Not all of them public figures, most of them not. And I think a sudden and unfortunate event in my life would be very much known and would very much be retributed severely. That's one thing. The other is that we have a lot of folks who do provide protection for us, and a lot of levels, in and out of government, in and out of corporate structures. And then there are a lot of things that you have to do for yourself. One of the things that a lot of people are not aware of falls into the category of misuse of wonderful technology, is that just as you can energetically and electrically and electronically effect healing with energy, you can also induce disease states. There's a very strange rash of cancer and other diseases from people over the years, which seem to be quite inexplicable. My right-hand assistant, Sherry Adamack, and I, and a congressman we were working with, all got metastatic cancer at the same time. She is dead. I was supposed to die first because mine was a much more aggressive and much more universally fatal cancer. But I'm still alive for some reason. And we have done specific things to countermeasure this. Now, you can't prove that this is something that is of a sinister origin, but it's very suspicious, extremely suspicious. And it's not just a recent phenomenon. It's happened over a number of years when people have moved the ball closer to the goal line of disclosure on the subject. You find they suddenly develop horrible diseases and drop dead very quickly. Sherry Adamack only lived 7 months from the time of her diagnosis to the time of her death in January of 1998. Now, you have to ask, how is this done? I know how it's done. We're not going to get into it, but it's very easily done. But you also have to question, how do you then do countermeasures for that? There are things you can do. But what I mainly have done, to be honest with you, is to take reasonable precautions to take care of myself. And I have a wonderful wife and 4 children who take care of me, because I'm sort of absent-minded professor sometimes. And you have a loving family, and you have many support people who help you, and many people who pray for your health and healing. And this is very useful. And the other thing is that I tend not to focus on these things. You know, I was warned to back off of this in 92. And I was taken to a place by the head of Army Intelligence, whose facility is at Fort Huachuca, and very key facility to these programs, by the way, underground also there. And he and a whole group of intelligence people said just how far he intended to take this. And I was subtly and not so subtly told to back off. I said, I won't do it. And I told him 3 things. Number one, when I was 17, I was very ill, and I died. And I had a near-death experience. And so I learned that there is no death, and therefore I do not fear death. Number two, that I'm not rich. but I'm wealthy enough as a doctor that I can do as I damn well please, and I don't need your money. And number three, this is the most important one, is that I've had contact with the real extraterrestrial phenomenon. I know what it is, and you can't deceive me. He then offered to make me a part of this secret group, this MJ-12 group. He went subsequently to my wife and flattered her and helped her, the world, in terms of power and what have you. I refused. Now, of course, ever since then, I have been defamed and attacked and what have you. You can't get on the internet and type my name in without finding endless defamations and attacks. But this is what you expect if you're making a difference. If you're not making a difference, you're not going to get attacked. So it's okay. You expect that. So my view on it is that not put fear into it. I have no fear of it. At all. And whatever happens to me, happens. So what? I've taken care of children in the ER, high school kids, 15 years old, who have been stabbed through the left ventricle of the heart and died in my hand because somebody patted their girlfriend on the behind. This is in America, of course. But, so, what if, you know, if there is some risk here, I say, so what? When the friend of the president told me after we had reached the CIA director, came to my house and said, we're afraid that he's going to, we think that the Kennedy will end up like, that President Clinton will end up like Jack Kennedy if he does what you're recommending on this disclosure and on this inquiry into the subject. But I didn't say in my talk, I'll say now. I said, so what? He sends our boys off to war so they die. I said, there are some things we're taking some reasonable risk for. What could be a greater thing than the return to the people of not only our government and our secret technologies, but the allowing of these technologies to come out to benefit the world, to save the world's environment, to lift up the people who are in poverty and starvation, to be able to create a civilization that does not have to terminate in sort of a poof of oil smoke some few decades from now. What could be a greater thing? So whatever happens, it's okay. I'm very much at peace with it.
I hope the question, of course, you can agree. The late Philip J. Crossan wrote the book The Day After Roswell. He describes that since the crash in Roswell, the American military has been at war with the ETs. And he also mentioned that in the 60s, 70s, they had the arsenal, the weapons, to shoot down this crafts, and he also mentioned episodes in West Germany in 1974 where they shoot down one of these crafts. Also the video footage from the space shuttles, I think it's the STS-96, shows that some beams are shot up from the Earth directed to one of the UFOs. So my question is, are NATO or and the American military at war with the extraterrestrials, secretly?
Yes and no. Let me be very clear in my answer. Very careful on this answer. I assure you that I am the only person that you will ever speak to who has had prolonged and multiple meetings with members of the Joint Staff, the head of intelligence, J2, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA director, and other people like this, many. These men, without exception, are horrified by what you just described. They have no access to the projects that are doing what you just described. The reason they have asked me to come into the Pentagon and into some of these places is to let them know what a rogue element that is within our society is doing. So when you ask, is the United States military or NATO involved in such actions, the answer is no, in terms of the normal command, chain of command structure. The National Military Command Center is not running this project. However, there are projects that are using advanced weapon systems to track target and on occasion successfully destroy extraterrestrial vehicles as they approach Earth or enter our atmosphere. An Air Force Office of Special Investigations top secret witness, one of these 200 top secret people I'm working with, has described to me entire satellite systems which are not pointing down to Iraq or Soviet Union. They're pointing out into space, and they are used to pick up and track these objects and destroy them when they can. This has happened so often that the extraterrestrials have destroyed or neutralized a lot of these systems to protect themselves. So is this something that's a serious problem? Yes, I didn't speak of it because I didn't have time. The Boutros-Ghali family, you know, Boutros-Ghali was Secretary General of the UN, they were very worried about this because they had indications that there was something very wrong going on that they knew nothing about. And so I gave a lecture to the United Nations that was entitled The Foundations of Universal Peace. And in it, I described what we had to do as a civilization to ensure that the future is one of peace and not of this kind of conflict. But this is what happens when what Eisenhower, the President of the United States, said, when the military-industrial sector takes on so much secrecy, so much power, that it escapes the controls necessary. I recently briefed the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, in the United States. And this person had tried to make inquiry into the kind of project that we've been discussing here today. This is a three-star general. He was repeatedly told that such projects exist. The only thing he ever got out of his inquiry was a little E.T. doll about this big that someone gave him as a joke that was on his shelf when I went into his office at the Pentagon. When I discussed this with him, he was horrified that this could be true, but he allowed this. He says, what you're describing, if true, is a horrible conspiracy, but I think it must exist, because when I took this office over, I was able to peek into a few places, and there were some very strange bedfellows doing some rather nasty things. And what he allowed also was that through all of his inquiries, at the Defense Intelligence Agency, he was never told what was really going on. Now, this means then that you cannot say that the U.S. military per se, or the NATO military per se, is involved in such undertakings, but that there is in fact a renegade group, a secret government within the government, in fact, that runs these kinds of projects. It is very dangerous. I can't overemphasize. I've been playing this down this weekend because we didn't turn it. I tried to keep myself positive. But I can tell you that there's a cosmic tripwire out there. And we're about to stumble across it. Because an option of engaging in interplanetary war is not an allowable option. And our capacity to do so can be neutralized if we get to the point where that becomes an operational program in a large-scale way. So we're flirting with the disaster here, and the only way it's going to be made right is for the people's representatives, to take back control. When I was meeting with the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, an admiral, Navy admiral, he told me, and Ed Mitchell, astronaut Ed Mitchell, was with me during this meeting, by the way, I introduced him to all this stuff on purpose. That's another long story. But the admiral said, I am horrified that this is true because I am the person in charge of gathering intelligence for the entire joint staff and analyzing it. And you're telling me that these operations are going forward and I have no access. I said, yes, sir. Subsequently, he made an inquiry. And we gave him the entry point. Let me say that, so his inquiry would hit the right place. He was told, yes, there is such a project, and you do not have a need to know. This is the admiral in charge of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm telling you the truth. This is a very dangerous situation. And believe me, you know, nobody, more than I know, people think of admiral, won't these people laugh at you? Stephen Greer, head of Sea City, UFO doctor. I said, no, there's been no laughter. I've seen grown men cry.
I'd like to address each of the panelists, perhaps starting with Richard Boylan. If each of you could say something from your current perspective about two topics. One, having to do with sources of funding for research. You know, how does one go about, are there any sources of funding that don't compromise the independence of the research being done? So, funding, and number two, what your current observations that you may care to make about media and the possibility for information being shared more widely. Thank you. Each of you could address those two items. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start. Like to hear what everybody has to say to those questions. For funding, there seems to be a rule in ufology and the study of the UFO subject that the better funded a project, the more likely it is to be disinformation or run by the rogue group that wants to keep the subject muddled or trivialized or ridiculed. When you see billionaires spend huge amounts of money for phony scientific organizations, I'm not talking about Joe Fromage, by the way, I'm talking about a individual headquartered variously in Nevada and New Mexico who has created an organization with the lofty title of that National Institute for Discovery Science. That is a cover-up for the true information. This is highly distressing. The real, sincere, interested in the truth, UFO research investigations have always been operated hand to mouth, out of the pocket by individuals using their own life savings and some high risk of personal wealth and safety. This is not a coincidence. This is not perversion. It is by design. Anytime a serious stream of no strings attached money should ever happen to come towards a serious researcher, that source of funding would be stopped by the group that wants to maintain a monopoly on extraterrestrial technology. So all we see are little, small, hand-to-mouth operations by individuals or small groups of individuals on their spare time as a volunteer effort. That's all that is permitted to exist. It would be wonderful if that were to change, but that will require the economic power dominance in this world to change, where a small group have most of the economic control in this world. In the United States, it is said that 1,000 families own 40% of the wealth. And there are similar concentrations in Europe and elsewhere. As long as the more conservative members of these plutocracies decide that the broad world having extraterrestrial technologies against their personal money and power interests, the concentration of money and power that they enjoy, they will block it by all the money and power they have to block it. And so we are seeing a natural consequence of these things. I'm not saying anything that anybody who's taken the slightest study of civics doesn't already know. We would be surprised if it were different. But what we have to do as citizens is overcome the power of money and the influence it brings by a broad citizen effort around the world. And we have but one major weapon at our disposal, and that is the Internet. Because it allows us, as some of the people in this room know so well, to communicate with each other in 15 minutes or less around the world at essentially no cost, and allows us to share ideas And because it is built in such a distributed way, it was built to be able to survive nuclear war and still keep ticking. And because it has been built in such a distributed way that if you knock out one, there are a handful of other routes the information would go, we are able to communicate with each other. And so as we build it, you grassroots up citizen wave of consciousness. That, I believe, is how we are going to take back our society and the correct understanding of things from those who control the official media and keep a blanket around this information.
Our organization was funded by the National Institute for Discovery Science for one project. A number of other groups were turned down. We had to face 18 scientists, and they scrutinized us to no end. A number of them were medical doctors, surgeons. Some of these people had 2 and 3 degrees, PhDs. Some of them had 2 PhDs and MD. It was most interesting experience. We were not in any way inhibited by what we were told about how we should proceed. So for me, in my one experience with National Institute for Discovery Science, I wanted to sit Bob Bigelow down and ask him some questions. I said, I've got some questions for you from the UFO community. I said, you made a great deal of money available to UFO, fund for UFO research. You made money available for MUFON and for UFOs. I want to know why you withdrew it. He said, I'll give you the answer to that instantly. He said, I made that money available for years, and he said, the only condition on the amount of, and he said, there was no amount on the money. He said, the whole problem was this. He said, I told those people all they had to do was agree on one project. If they'll just agree, he said, the funding, there was no problem. He said, I could not get those people to agree on any project for 3 years. And that is the sad state of affairs of ufology. That was their fault. That was not Bob Bigelow. Bob Bigelow may be someone else, I don't know. I know for one thing, he said, I was simply discussing that they didn't spend the money. They could not even agree. And anybody that's been in the UFO community knows this is true. They just will not agree on what they want to do. So, in terms of funding, as Dr. Boyle has mentioned, much of the funding that you do, your own research, many of you grassroots investigators know for a fact that money is spent out of your own pocket. For me and my organization, the stuff that we do for people, the surgeries, the psychological work, anything that we do is free. It's totally free. We never charge nothing to anyone. We have no interest. It's not a money-making deal. It's a philanthropic effort. Our position is different from these two gentlemen here. It is to find the evidence of the events. It is to support the evidence with scientific and medical findings. We cannot, from our position, make statements that cannot be substantiated. I mean, unless we can substantiate that well, then we're not going to simply make statements. It doesn't mean it is true. It doesn't mean that certain things aren't so. It's just we're not going to make enough statements that we cannot personally support. So financially, it's been real difficult. It always has been, probably always will be. There are other people who are interested in doing things for this. The only problem I have with all that, and I tell everybody that has an interest in being a benefactor, this one thing. You cannot in any way control what I do, or what I say, or how this team works. If you do, nobody's interested in your money. It's just that simple. So one last thing I'd like to say, I spent 2 years in the Central Intelligence tell them, say, see, I keep most of the stuff quiet because it's not real pleasant. I'm new assassins in the company. I assure you there is no one out there to save. If they wanted you, I promise you, you are not safe. Anyone can be hit anytime in any amount of ways you can imagine. I promise you, if you, as I do, as the doctor just mentioned, if you have a belief in God, you're better off for that than you are trying to trust some intelligence community for protection. Because if they wanted to, they'd get you. And the only thing that protects you would be the Almighty Himself. Because they can do it. That's just a fact of life. I can attest to that. These people are good. So, as far as being saved, I think if anybody is alive, or going to get hit or something like that, it'd be, first of all, a major mistake in most respects because it points the finger back at somebody. And these people don't like fingers pointed at them. They like to do their stuff in the most covert ways that can be pointed at them. So, like I said, that's from personal experience. So, I can say a lot more about that, but I won't. It's not something I read or somebody I talked to. I was there. That's the reason I got out.
Well, I'd like to echo the. I'd like to put this in a little different framework. Echoing some of what Dr. Boylan said, and that is that in reality, the projects that get funded are the projects whose basic focus and premise is consonant with the overall strategy of folks running these secret programs. Is that clear? In other words, I met with a multi-billionaire in Europe. He's a major benefactor of also a lot of alleged alien abduction and alien implant project. And in a private meeting which lasted 2 hours, he tried to convince me that, number one, all the setbacks in human history since that in the 80s were the work of these extraterrestrials with the agents of Satan. Number two, that his funding of abduction research was because he wanted people to know the horrible truth about the aliens so that we could eventually unite and fight them in the last great holy war, which he referred to as Armageddon. He further tried to convince me that my talents and resources should go into those sorts of efforts. And when I begged to differ with him, we agreed to disagree. Later that night at the St. Moritz Hotel on Central Park South, with my 8-year-old daughter in another bed on the other side of the room, I was targeted with some kind of electromagnetic system, which resulted in the following: total psychomotor paralysis, no ability to move my body, a projection of extraordinary fear into the room, and the beginnings of altered state of consciousness. I went, this happened a couple of times over a couple of hours. I was able to terminate it simply by some meditative techniques I know and being able to transcend out of the normal state of awareness that we find ourselves in, identified with our individuality. And I was quite, what they didn't know, of course, is that I knew the folks running this sort of program. They're very human. They're made to look extraterrestrial. And when I had turned aside this offer to work with someone that whose primary purpose in funding abductionism was to get out his certain worldview on the cosmology and the extraterrestrial conflict, this is what occurred to me. Now, he made it very clear that the people he funded didn't necessarily share his view, but he was very careful in what he was selecting in terms of where he wanted to go, because that would amplify the part of the phenomenon which he wanted to have amplified for his own religious as well as strategic interests. I hope that makes that very clear.
Unfortunately, I have to terminate the date today.